Okay, may I have your attention, please? I want to welcome everyone to the 2011 Maryland Libertarian Party Convention. For those of you whom I have not met, which should be probably nobody, my name is Bob Johnston. I've been the chair of the party now for 4 years, and this is my fifth convention. I want to thank everyone for coming out today. I'm going to go ahead and say it. I've done another great job. I mean, we have a fantastic lineup of speakers again, and I'm always gratified the people who give up their time and to come out and join us. Everybody's busy these days, and I really do appreciate it. We have some new people here, some new faces. Please invite people to your table, get to know them, make them feel welcome. The schedule is as it normally is. We'll have our afternoon speakers: Ken Krawchuk, Dr. Jim Lark. Len Lazarick will be here later today. We will have the Central Committee meeting at 5 o'clock. And 6:30, quarter of 7, we'll have dinner, and then James Bovard. If there's anything I can do, if you have any problems or issues, please let me know, other than asking for money. Sorry, can't help you there. Come see me, and I'll do my best to accommodate you. Before we begin, does anyone have any questions?
Dr. Lee. I just want to make sure everybody understands. We're recording the audio of this convention, and we're going to put it on our website, so be aware. If you want it turned off, you got to turn it off. I'm not going to get back and figure out later on.
And that's just a little thing right up here, so just be aware.
Very good. If there are no questions, let us bring up our first speaker, and that is Ken Krawchuk. Ken Krawchuk is a longtime activist in the libertarian movement. From the state of Pennsylvania. He has been involved and registered as a libertarian for going on 20 years now. He's been an 8-time candidate, including 2 record-setting runs for governor in Pennsylvania. He's also been a 2-time chair up there of the state party. He is a toastmaster, a professional speaker, and a freelance writer. He's coming out with his first novel later this year, Atlas Snubbed, which is a parody of the Ayn Rand book, in which he discusses the shortcomings of the objectivist philosophy and how it has hurt the libertarian movement. And his solution, which is what he will discuss today, the separation of society and state. Please welcome Ken Krawchuk. Do you want me to move the podium?
Everything's fine. Hello. It's great to be back. I haven't been here at a Maryland convention since, 2003 or something like that. How many of you were here when I was here last time? A couple of you. Well, good. Some of you don't know what you're about to go through. I was here then to talk about the nuts and bolts of political activism, how you can become somebody in your political world. I was also here in 2000 when I was running for the Libertarian vice presidential nomination. That was a long time ago, and the last time I had the privilege of speaking with Bruce Batchelor. Long time, 11 years now. But it's great to be back. It's good to be here. What I'd like to do today, I have several goals. I would like to point out what I think to be a hole in the Libertarian platform. I would like to talk about where it came from and what we can do about it. In the process, I would hope to get you people to think outside of the statist box. Some of what I say might surprise you. Some of it may make you angry. Some of it you may just shrug. And as Bob mentioned, my topic today is related to my new novel, Atlas Snubbed, which, if I find a good agent, will be coming out later on this year. This is a draft version. And by the way, I'll be auctioning off this copy later on tonight. Fundraiser, just a thank you for inviting my wife and I down here today. One of the reasons why I wanted to talk about this is because this is the first time I've talked about it in public. So you folk are getting a sneak preview of what it is that the book is all about. And I figure in front of a friendly audience, if I make a major mistake, you're going to be the people who are going to tell me about it. I'm looking to see you. Hey, I'm in politics. I got thick skin. So whatever you like. So, are we ready? Let's start with what I see as the hole in the libertarian platform. How many of you run for office? Show of hands. All right. I love libertarian conventions. How about high office? Governor? Senator? Just a couple. Okay. Well, let me address my questions to you. I've run for governor twice, and I've gotten this question. You libertarians want to end welfare? You're heartless. Oh, abolish Social Security. You want grandma eating dog food, don't you? No Medicare. Who's going to pay for my prescriptions? I can't even talk today. If you think public education is expensive, try ignorance. How many of you heard those arguments? Yeah. All right, let's pick on somebody. Let's get a couple of answers. Lorenzo, I've known you for a long time. Why don't you take that first one for me? You're heartless. How could you possibly consider abolishing welfare?
Welfare, actually.
Briefly, please.
No.
Okay. It should roll right off your tongue.
Money given to the welfare system actually does not help people. If you were to give your dollars to the Salvation Army, for instance,
yep.
Every 75 cents of that dollar would go to help the people they're claiming to help, and the 25 cents would go to overhead.
Mm-hmm.
Flip it around when you're talking about government welfare. So who really wants to help the poor? You or me? I think the answer is this one.
Good answer. And I've said that too. During my governor campaign, I would hold up a dollar bill and I would rip it into a big piece and a small piece, and I would say, I crumble up the big piece, toss it over my shoulder, say, that goes into the bureaucracy, and this is what's left. Good answer. I've said that. Mr. Ackman, it's good to see you again, sir. Let me throw a question at you. You're going to abolish Social Security? What do you want, seniors eating dog food?
Well, let's just admit that Social Security is a scam. It's a pyramid scheme. Taking money from some people, giving it to others, giving them a promise that they're going to get money, a promise that, in fact, we know or should know cannot be kept.
Yep.
If you believe in government helping the old people, then you better, elderly, then you better do it through an outright admitted welfare system. On the other hand, if you really believe in a pension plan, then we need to set up a pension plan where people will really own what they're putting into it.
I like that. And I said the same thing, because when my father passed away, my mother got $225 death benefit after my father contributed for his whole life. Good answer. I've said the same thing, too. Now, you had your hand up? Who ran for state light office? What's your... Okay. Okay. Doug, let me hit you with a question. Third one. Where do I get my prescriptions if you shut down Medicare?
Well,
okay. Well, we'll let this slide then. Anybody else want to take a shot at it? No? Well, that's okay.
Well, I'll take a shot at it. I ran for governor, so of course I would also say that that's not within my, would not be within my jurisdiction to do anything about. But I do have an answer.
Well, let me give you one in your jurisdiction.
Yeah.
I assume public education is paid for by the state here.
Yeah.
All right. If you think it's expensive, try ignorance.
What I think is expensive is the way that people in Montgomery County and the rest of Maryland are throwing enormous amounts of money into the Baltimore City public city school system, and the children sometimes don't even have toilets, they don't have water to drink.
Mm-hmm.
Where is that money going? We need to look at that first before we spend a penny more in new government education.
Yeah. See, all good answers, and all answers that I have personally given as well. But I noticed there's a recurrent theme going through them all. We're going to eliminate what the government has. And to quote the late, great Harry Brown, are we going to replace it with nothing? Or are we going to rely on other organizations to take care of that? When it comes to any kind of a socialist program, whether it's welfare, public schools, excuse me, government schools, or whatever it may be, the supporters of those programs, they fall on two sides, the haves and the have-nots. The haves will say things like, oh, how are we going to feed the poor? And the have-nots are going to say, what's going to keep me from starving? These are the people who are looking to us as leaders for a solution. Well, when they look to the Democrats and the Republicans, what do? They play Santa Claus. They use government money to buy the votes. And they violate the Constitution in the process in order to do that. And they usually get elected. We libertarians, we don't do that. We don't buy votes. In fact, we go the other way. To quote Dick Body, the California libertarian, I come not to seize power, but to bury it. But the result too often is we don't get elected. Some people say, let's educate them about the Constitution, because this is what the Constitution says. Constitution is very much out of favor. It's not taught in the schools. You can ask your typical person about the Constitution, they don't know anything about it. So education in the short term, the next 5 years, 10 years, doesn't sound like it's going to be a solution. But just for fun, let's pretend that that happens. Let's say that all of a sudden some great rock star says, oh, Constitution's wonderful. And all of a sudden the number one hit on YouTube is Thomas Jefferson talking about the Federalist Papers or something like that. What happens then? People say, all right, we're going to constrain government. We're going to keep them inside the bounds of the Constitution, bind them with the chains of the Constitution. But the problems that the socialist state once solved are still there. Kids still need education. Seniors are still eating dog food. Prescriptions still need to fill. And the voters, even though government's not doing it, they're still going to turn to leadership for a solution. What may be that solution? From my point of view, I found running for governor, that is a hole in our platform. There are things that we just don't say. We have suggestions. There are other organizations that can pick that up. There are private groups. There are church groups. But let me tell you, it is my opinion that the only way that we are going to become elected libertarians instead of convention libertarians is that we have to solve people's problems. Half the problem is getting government out of our way. The other half of the problem is meeting the needs of the people who are depending upon what the government should not be doing. As far as I'm concerned, nothing, replacing it with nothing, is not an option when it comes to the welfare state. Now, I bet a couple of you are very angry with me. Here I am up here saying lefty things. Yes, yes, I admit I've sworn an oath to uphold the Constitution, and I will do that. And there is no provision for charity in the Constitution. That is correct. And yes, as libertarians, it is not our goal to glad hand taxpayer money to anybody who may particularly need it. You're going to interrupt me? Yes.
Yeah, you said there's no charity provision in the Constitution. But what they do is not charity. Charity is voluntary.
Okay.
Taxation is not voluntary.
I agree. And you're getting ahead of me. Maybe you're not far behind me on this. This is all good. Okay. Point is, there's a problem out there that needs to be solved. The Democrats and Republicans are solving it. Badly, illegally, unconstitutionally, but they are solving it. And I believe that if we want to get elected, we need to solve that problem as well. Let's practice. Let's look at a real-world solution, real-world problem, and see if we can come up with a solution for it. The problem as I see it is that $3.5 trillion budget that the government is about to pass. There are several problems with it. Problem number one, it's $3.5 trillion! There are all sorts of gimmicks you can show people to make them realize how big that number is, but in this room, we know it's big. Second problem, revenues are $2.2 trillion. That leaves $1.3 trillion with a T dollars separating them. And this is no trial separation either. This looks like a permanent divorce. It looks like they're never going to get together. Every year, we add another $1.5 trillion to that federal debt, which is now $14 trillion that we owe to foreign dictators. And then hiding behind that is $113 trillion of unallocated spending, obligations the government has for the out years. If we took 8 years of budget and put it toward those out years, it would just barely make it. There's some of the problems. But it gets worse because they divide the budget into two parts, mandatory and discretionary. Mandatory is the welfare state. Discretionary are things like defense. You get that? Defense is discretionary. Welfare is mandatory. Have we lost control of this argument? It's bad, and it's getting worse. Right now, about 60-65% of the budget is mandatory. $2.2 trillion. Coincidentally, that's the same amount as the revenue coming in. If we took every penny and gave it to welfare state, we have no money left over to run the government. So when we run the United States government, all that money comes from foreign insurers and adds to that mountain of $14 trillion of debt. How do we turn this ship around? It's a huge, huge ship. Well, we turn to libertarian solutions. To pay off the debt, of course, we could sell up government assets. I'm not sure if we have $14 trillion worth of government assets, but let's say for the sake of argument that we do, so we can eradicate the debt. Good answer. But the problem still exists. We're still spending $1.3 trillion more than we have, $2.2 trillion on the welfare state year after year. So if we paid off the debt, it's back. Back right again the very next year. So the problem here that we need to attack is not a couple billion off of defense. It's not eliminating the second engine for the Joint Strike Fighter. The problem is the welfare state. It's too big. Anything we do, if it doesn't include massive cuts in the welfare programs, not going to matter. Not going to matter at all. Let's assume, just for the sake of argument, that we eliminate Medicare, Social Security. They're about 43% of the budget all by themselves. If you did that, you could suddenly have a $700 billion surplus, $750 billion. And if you pass that back to the taxpayers, that's about $2,000 for every man, woman, child, and illegal alien in the country. Now that's the kind of Santa Claus that we libertarians play. You can keep your own money. You can do with it what you want. Doesn't that rock? We could cheer about that. Say, yeah, yeah, look at that. Thousands of dollars for everybody. But the problems that Social Security and Medicare were addressing, those problems still exist. Let me give you an example. Last fall, I do professional public speaking, and I was doing speaking on Medicare Advantage plans. And I have one woman come up to me. Her drug bill for 1 year is over $20,000. If we libertarians gave her $2,000, you know what she'd say? Where's the other $18,000? What am I going to do? I'm on a fixed income. Social Security didn't go up. I'm all alone. My children are all... I never had any children. I have no family. Whatever it is. What are you going to tell her? Angry yet? Sound like a lefty. I'm not. Trust me. I'm not a lefty. Is she going to vote for you? No. She's not going to vote for you. Because you're not playing Santa Claus for her. You're not solving her problem. Which comes back to what I was saying. That is the hole. They're expecting us to solve their problems. We can't. Now, liberty does have a longer-term solution, as was pointed out with a couple of the answers we have here. We can get people relying on the private sector. Things will get better. But there's no denying there's a hole there in the expectations of the people who we want to vote for us. With me? Where did this hole come from? And it's a hole that's a lot bigger than the donut hole that us gray hairs are going to have to start worrying about soon enough. This hole came, I can sum it up in two words. Ayn Rand. Of course, we all know who Ayn Rand is. She's a philosophical father of the Libertarian Party. I call her the matriarch, but she hated that word. Maybe I should call her that. I don't know. And we all know that our Libertarian Pledge is directly quoted from her book, Atlas Shrugged. I certify that I do not advocate the initiation of force to achieve social or political goals. Pure Ayn Rand. It's a very broad political statement. It means that when we stand up there, place our hand on the Bible, and swear to uphold the Constitution, we mean it. 100% we mean it. And since there's no provision for charity or welfare or any of those things, whatever word Lorenzo will let me use, since there's no provision for it in the Constitution, we can't do it. We can't redistribute wealth and play Santa Claus. Now, Rand, she was very, very particular about this point. I have a quote here from her. This is from the Playboy interview of 1964. Quote, "I do not consider charity a major virtue, and above all, I do not consider it a moral duty. There is nothing wrong with helping other people, if and when they are worthy of the help, and if you can afford to help them. But I regard charity as a marginal issue. Marginal issue. And like Rand, the LP considers charity to be a marginal issue. I asked the questions earlier. The answers I got were, let's look at it. Let's offload it. Let's do something about it. Us? No. We're not going to do it. You elect us? Nah, no charity. Nah, can't do that, you know? Oh, sorry. Swerno? Can't do that. It's a marginal issue. It's a hole. And they use it against us in every single election. I had a quote. It was in the paper, and I'm sorry I forgot it. It was from the Democrat, Wisconsin. And it was beautiful in its poetry. The seniors of Wisconsin are counting on us. The hard workers of Wisconsin are counting on us. That's what they're using against us. But you see, by Rand not addressing the question, by punting the question, she left us rudderless. All she told us is, government can't do it, that's socialism, and socialism is wrong. I think everybody in this room would agree with that statement. Certainly I do. Individuals, however, are allowed, but you don't have to do it. So who does? Nobody? Leaving your constituents in the lurch? What do? The way I look at it right now, we have anarchy in charity. You want to go to one protection agency? Fine. You want to go to this other judgment agency? Fine. Do what thou wilt shall be the whole of the law when it comes to charity. But don't ask us libertarians. Don't ask your government. Come on. Off. That's where our hole came from. Now, that hole was not always there, because charity in government is relatively a recent thing. From the dawn of time, it was always the area of religious groups, which is what we've always been saying, we libertarians. And they did an adequate job. Usually what they would do is give you a couple square meals, a place to stay for the night, and then shuffle you on your way, off to the next place. Then you go somewhere else, get a couple more nights, a couple more meals, shuffle you on your way. So the problem wasn't so much solved as it was passed along. It became secularized, finally, in 1563, after thousands of years of pure anarchy. Now all of a sudden government stepped in with the first poor law. And that didn't work too well, because what it did is it set up these religious-like houses where people could stop in for the night, get a meal, and then be shuffled on their way. It was reformed again around Charles Dickens' time with the new poor law. That one, of course, Charles Dickens chronicled it, and we all know all of his stories, whether it's Lisa, I want more, or Tiny Tim with his crutches. Oh, the horrors of it all. But what they did, one of the big things they did, is they established workhouses, which were a little bit beyond the stay a night shuffle on. You could stay here several nights. But they made it as difficult as possible for you to stay there. They made it demeaning. They made it almost like a prison. Oh, there are no workhouses. Yes, there were. It was the first time that a government welfare program deliberately tried to make your life as hard as possible. And for some reason, it's never stopped. Welfare still does that. It's bad. Well, it grew from there. Now, in the young United States, government charity never took root. Never at all. Some of the states did. For example, Pennsylvania, our Constitution has always had a provision for widows, orphans, and the blind. And then later on, a piece was added for veterans. And that's it. Now, of course, Pennsylvania is out of control as the rest of the states. But in the federal side, there was never any provision for charity. In fact, I'll bet most of you know the story of Davy Crockett. He was once a congressman, and he almost lost his second election because of a mistake he made when it came to charity. There was a huge fire in Georgetown, and he voted in favor of a $20,000 appropriation to help make the people whole. Well, he went back to his constituency. They almost lynched him. They said, "How dare you? You swore an oath. You broke your oath." Well, he got down on his knees and begged forgiveness and said, "I will sin no more." And they reelected him. And then later on, when there was another vote that came up for a widower of some army guy, they were going to award her a pension. He got up. He gave that a speech. He said, can't do it. It's not the Constitution. I'm the poorest one in this whole room. I will give a week's pay if you'll all do the same. That law, which was certain to pass, failed. That's the kind of thinking we libertarians have. And that's the kind of thinking that belongs in our state, capital S state, in our government. But in the United States, didn't happen. Years went by, and everybody thought like Colonel Crockett. Until our buddies in the Supreme Court, during the Great Depression, suddenly said, it's okay to do charity. Social Security? Sure, that's fine. WPA? Mm-hmm. CCC? Yeah, we can do all those things. Suddenly, we have governmental charity in the United States. Game on, as they say. 75 years have gone by since then, and here we stand. $3.5 trillion budget, $14 trillion deficit, $113 trillion in unfunded obligations. That's where we are. That's how we got there. Big question is, where do we go from here? So let me recap. There's a hole. Governmental charity is forbidden by the Constitution, but personal charity is in a state of anarchy. The D's and the R's have filled that hole. Every socialist law since 1563 to the present has had one goal in mind: to help those who can't help themselves. They've filled that hole. They've filled it badly. They've filled it expensively. They've filled it with fraud. They've filled it with abuse. They've filled it with bureaucracy. And they've filled it with price as no object, because it's coming out of your pockets. The question I have for you today is, how can we make welfare work better? Isn't that a trip? Here's a libertarian addressing a libertarian audience saying, how do we make welfare work? You know, we can't. It's like asking how we can make communism better. Oh yeah, we libertarians can make communism work if only we were king. We can't. And you know, Davy Crockett knew it as well. I have a quote here from him. He was king of the wild frontier. Quote, the power of collecting and dispersing money at pleasure is the most dangerous power that can be entrusted to man, particularly under our system of collecting revenue via tariff. If you have the right to give to one, you have the right to give to all. And as the Constitution neither defines charity nor stipulates the amount, you are at liberty to give anything and everything which you may believe or profess to believe is a charity, and to any amount you may think proper. You will very easily perceive what a wide door this would open for fraud and corruption on one side, and for robbing people on the other. I tell you, Davy Crockett must have climbed through the time tunnel, looked at America today, went back, and wrote down what he saw. How prophetic was that man? But he was more than prophetic, because not only did he point out the question, he pointed out the answer. Did you hear it? I just said it. Anybody?
I'm saying that we
pay. Just in that quote right there. Let me read it again. The very first sentence. Quote, the power of collecting and dispersing money at pleasure is the most dangerous power that can be entrusted to man, particularly under our system of collecting revenue via tariff. Quote that great mathematician Harry Seldon, the solution to our crisis is obvious. What I'm proposing, and the key idea in this book, is that we implement Davy Crockett's warning. Don't entrust to man. Don't entrust to the system of collecting revenue by tariff. The goal, what we need to do, is separate the needs of charity from the needs of the state. Right now, it's the state that's taking care of the needs of society, all at the taxpayer's expense. But if you couple the coercive power of taxation with the never-ending need of charity, you're courting destruction. The Bible teaches us, the poor you will always have with you. So this $2.2 trillion a year that we're throwing into the lefty programs, they're never going to go away. Not ever. It's like connecting a tank of oxygen to a vacuum. They'll be gone. And you'll be left looking for air. The solution is that we should place Solomon. Let it be divided. We should separate the needs of society and the needs of the state. Just like we separate religion and state, economy and state, and all those other separations we libertarians advocate, I want to add a new one to the list. I'm advocating the separation of society and state. There's a lot of ways I could take that from there, but let me just go cut right to the chase in the interest of time as well. Let me set out a straw man. Let's create something new. Since government cannot address charity for all those reasons that Davy Crockett warned us about, then let's not have it do that. Instead, let's set up a parallel organization to administer charity. Let's call it society. Capital S, quote unquote, society. It's an eleemosynous organization for any of you legal scholars. Who's ever heard that word before? I love it, man. Only in a libertarian audience would you ever hear somebody admit to knowing that word. You could probably pronounce it better than I could. What I would do is I would take the United States Constitution, pick it up verbatim, and use that as the framework for society. That we need to have a president of society, a society to have its own Congress, its own courts. But there's two major changes that I would make to the Constitution before I gave it to society. Number one, I would remove the power of compulsory taxation. Society would have to run on voluntary contributions. I don't call it taxes or duties. The best word I can come up with is benefaction. And nobody's using the word benefaction, so it doesn't already mean something to anybody else. So we have benefaction rather than taxes, voluntary benefaction. Second change is I would pop out Article 1, Section 8 in its entirety. Now, you're libertarians, you know what that is. They're the 17 enumerated powers of the government. To coin money, to make war, to run the post office, and to levy taxes. And I'll lump in the 16th Amendment with that as well. And just the entire, all the power. I would pull out Article 1, Section 8, and I would replace it with one sentence. And I quote, "Society's Congress shall have the power to make voluntary guidelines regarding requesting donations and making expenditures towards the common good and the good of others." That would mean that where government passes laws, society would pass guidelines, voluntary guidelines, mandatory laws versus voluntary guidelines. Where the state would collect mandatory taxes, society would collect voluntary benefactions. No coercion to contribute, except maybe there might be some societal pressure saying, "Oh, you didn't contribute this year. Okay, maybe I won't do business with you." Society would draw up an annual budget based upon the guidelines it passed. For example, let's say that they had a prescription drug program in society. They'd say, "We expect to spend this much money. We expect, in a crowd like this, I would say maybe 1 out of 10 of you are going to give. So 1 out of 10 of you are going to give. We're going to need so much money divided by that number. We come up with a benefaction. And we'd have enough money to run our society." That's it in a nutshell. Society has its own constitution. Society has its own organization. Society has its own budget. Society runs 100% separate from the rest of the public commonweal. It's the oft-mentioned but never seen social contract. And even if you signed it, you're not bound by it. You don't have to contribute. You don't have to follow the guidelines. It's their little separate thing on the way. It's a disciplined way for people to help others in need while not giving scoundrels a chance to steal. I've had some people say, "Oh, Ken, that's just the United Way." Like, no. Major difference. First major difference is it's national in scope. And there's no reason why it couldn't go international in scope or local in scope. A local society, a state society, federal society, a United Nations society, whatever it may be, because it would have no power. sort of set it up, that's fine. You give the kind-hearted people of the world a vehicle to express themselves. You've now taken charity and anarchy, thrown it away. We no longer would have anarchy and charity. We would have a concrete answer. And everybody would be represented. Those of us who believe that the government should be limited to protecting the rights and property of citizens, we'd have our state. Those people who believe that, oh, we should help these hungry people, they would have their place too. The only person who wouldn't have their place are the people who want you to run your life their way, which is just the people we've run shut out in the cold. At least I would think so. So that's it in a nutshell. A simple solution. Almost too simple. So I think some of you may just shrug and say, ah, no big deal. But look how it would work in the real world. Let's go back to our $3.5 trillion mess. Let's say that we did take the welfare state. Let it be divided. All of a sudden, we now have a huge, huge surplus. We can start giving money back to people. And we don't have to do it all in one step. We can do it slowly. First, we can form society. Hold the elections. Let them study the problem. Let them come up with a rational way to approach welfare. Not this, I'll buy more for you every election. Oh, another $500 for seniors this year. How's that? No, no, no. No more politicians buying votes. Instead, let's come up with the guidelines to do it. And if you don't like it, you're not going to contribute. And if the people on the left who like to do that sort of thing, if they see that it's a bum program, they're not going to contribute either. So it's going to now have that negative feedback on it, which is going to keep it more on the straight and narrow. And if there's not enough money to pay for all the guidelines, you have to tighten your belts, like most of us are doing in these tight times. It may take 2 years, may take 5 years, but we could start slowly shifting people from government charity over to society charity. And once we're done, that's it. We'll have two sides to it. I think we should do this immediately, because there's a crash coming. A huge crash, in my opinion. Our money, you can see it in the price of gold, $1,400. My little dime collection from when I was a little kid, those little silver dimes, through the roof, $30, $35 an ounce for silver. And the Liberty Dollar trial just started too. I can't wait to see how that's going to play out. But there's a crash coming. Who thinks there's not a crash coming? Am I in the right room or what? We've got to do something. There's a hole. There's trillions of dollars going down that hole. We need to plug it up. Here's a way. Separate society and state. Render under society the things that are society's, taking care of our fellow men, and relegate to the state the things that belong to the state, protecting our rights and property. We should do it now, because either we could do it now at our leisure and take 2, 3, 5, 10 years to get it right, or we can wait for that crash to hit and then be forced to do it when it may just be too late. So that's it. That's the idea. Separate society and state. It'll rein in the spending. Crash is coming, but let's put a solution in place today, before we're forced to do it on a very short schedule tomorrow. I would love to take questions, poke holes. And I'm just going to start from one side and come around. Spirit, please, see you, sir.
How many nonprofits do you think go on their own?
I would guess to say 10,000?
More. 20. How much of the money do you think they get from the government?
Probably half.
More.
I'm guessing.
70%.
Okay. I'm in the ballpark.
It's 80% of that money is the government.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're looking at a government that's based on values. Our system is based on values.
Mm-hmm.
We don't talk about that. But if you don't pay your tax, I was a businessman. One time I was, you know, you're supposed to keep the money out of the workman's comp, and I thought every 30 days I sent it in. Either 30 days, or when you get a certain amount of money, you've got to send it in within 2 days.
That's right. I had the same situation.
And I had like $1,000, and they charged me a $400 fine. And guess what? I call my lawyer. He says, look, they come close to your desk.
That's right.
And the guys will come, If we can meet up, we'll come back with the deputies with the guns to make it. You know,
you're absolutely correct.
They don't blow the door off like they do with SWAT teams, but that's not the best quality.
You should talk to Art Farnsworth up in Pennsylvania.
They'll come get you.
I take your point.
The point is that, you know, it's like me charging a dug-in group of people with artillery and Claymore mines and minefields, and I'm going to go over there with light weapons. I don't have any men I like they can bow them down.
Yep.
I don't think you guys. I'm with the.
It's a big problem.
It's worse than that.
It's a huge, it's almost, $1 trillion problem.
We almost have to go the way to Congress.
I disagree with you there, sir.
I hope you're right.
I hope I'm right too.
I do.
Because if I'm wrong, it's bad for all of us.
We're all in the suit.
You know. This will become a banquet like you've never seen in years if that happens. Come around the room.
It'll make Japan, what you see over there now, look like a playground.
I agree with every word he said. Yes.
It seems that if you put the two groups of people that you're going to be looking at here, you're going to have responsible people who are going to wonder, A, why am I going to give to this when I can do all this myself? If I'm going to pay for my own retirement, if I'm going to pay for my own health care, if I'm going to pay for my prescription, if I'm going to save in case I lose my job so I don't have to have unemployment and all the things the government does now, they're going to be putting their money into that.
Yep.
Then you're going to have the other group of people that are going to look at that and say, well, I don't have to contribute, but I'm going to get.
Yep.
Where's the money going to come from to do it?
Well, you're not going to have as much money in it as you do right now.
So those needs aren't going to be met anyway.
They're not going to be.
Especially not at the level they are now.
That's what I was going to say. I like where you guys anticipate. Not at the level we have now, because the level we have now is unsustainable. Mm-hmm. What we have to do is we have to cut back. There's just not enough money for it. And I actually address this, because the numbers, 1 in 100 are going to contribute. Well, you base your budget on the fact that only 1 in 100 are going to contribute. Let's say 99, it's not going to be 99 out of 100, but there are some people who are going to look for the free ride.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they're only going to be able to get so much. We may open up the poor wards in the hospital again, where you put 20 people into one large room, because that's all society can afford.
So why do we need a huge national organization to do what charity on a local level used to do before we had the welfare?
Because it's not happening now.
If we get rid of it. Come back.
No. Now you're going back to... Let me finish one at a time here.
Okay.
Now you're coming back to anarchy and charity. You're saying, well, whatever... Do what thou wilt shall be the whole of the law. And there are people who could be just like anarchy... Let me finish. It's going to be just like anarchy in government. Justice is going to be applied in a haphazard fashion. People are going to fall between the cracks. There's going to be people working at loggerheads. Whole areas that aren't going to be addressed. Without an organized, systemic way of looking at it, you're going to wind up with holes. And that's the big benefit of this. First of all, it's not going to cost us any money, because it's all voluntary. Second of all, the people who care about this are the ones who are going to do it. Now, maybe I don't mean to insult anybody here, but I'll bet you there aren't going to be a whole lot of libertarians in society. Libertarians are going to be in state, because that's where we see the more important problems to be solved. But the people who care are the ones, we're going to give them a place to play. It's a playground where they can't hurt us. Right now, the playground is government, and they're hurting us. Well, let me turn it around on you. If we shouldn't do this, how do we end the welfare state without crushing the lives of, I don't know, how many people on welfare? 20%?
Baltimore City, it's over 52%.
There you go.
Unemployed.
We'll use Spears number. What do you do for these 52%? Tell them starve? Tell it like this poor woman with a $20,000 prescription bill? We've got to do something. Do you agree we have to do something? Yes or no?
I agree we have to do something as a society.
Do you agree we as the Libertarian Party have to do something?
We have to make a solution.
Yeah, okay.
I disagree with that.
I was going to make some people mad.
Not solutions in the sense that we need to come up with a solution as a policy. We need to encourage the solution amongst individuals acting freely.
Yeah.
And giving
isn't that what
freely
I'm,
to their churches,
isn't that what I'm suggesting?
Organizations. But
Everybody gets heard once before I come back.
Compare that to the UN. The UN does the same thing. We all voluntarily, as countries, give to the UN, and they have no power.
I'm not a country. I have no input on that.
But if you look at individual countries instead of individual people,
no.
Individual countries all over the world, they
reification.
The UN,
I may call that reification. We don't do that.
It has no power. And it's a mess. It doesn't do anything right.
It's a mess now. It's not being done right now.
I know, but you're making a... You seem to be putting together an organization that's not going to be any different.
The main difference is it cannot hold a gun to your head.
Exactly.
It's a libertarian organization.
The UN can't hold a gun to my head either.
At this point.
Good answer. All right.
It still wastes everybody's money doing nothing good.
Not if you're the person who needs that money. Not if you're the person who cares about that person needing that money. Now, I could say, I put myself on the one side. Sounds like you're on that same side, too. You have to come up with a way. I think we need to come up with a solution. If we want to get elected, we need to come up with a solution. All right, let's come back to you. And I'm moving across the room like this. Sir?
Sometimes when people raise this issue about constitutional law and stuff, I just say, well, it's not in the Constitution, so if you want it there, why don't you amend the Constitution? So,
very good.
If you were to amend the Constitution, and I think
well,
the question is,
to make what they're doing now constitutional, I don't think would solve the problem. What it would do is it'd make it constitutional.
But it would raise the issue of arguing across the country and draw the nexus between the black and Shirley crap.
Uh-huh.
And
okay.
And when you're laying the surface, you might have a chance of people waking up and understanding what's
going on. That's true. And I agree with everything you're saying, except, as I said, if you make it constitutional, then this $1.3 trillion annual deficit will become endemic. It will always be there. Yeah, that's true. But then they're going to say the same thing the guy in Wisconsin said. Oh, the poor, oh, the workers, oh, the people.
Without this debate.
No, with debate.
The problem is that the goddamn progressives did another round on the Constitution.
Yep.
With their crap.
Yep.
None of this stuff is legal.
Yep.
And yet,
nobody's
going to
argue.
They've committed all these mouth-breathing knuckleheads that it is.
Okay. Okay. Separating society and state will also help do that. But I agree with you. George Washington said that in his farewell address. If the Constitution be wrong in any particular, let it be amended by the process it sets out. Because no matter how good your intent, it is the usual way that free governments are destroyed. And that's what's happening to us today. I like your answer, I just don't like your conclusion.
Now,
yes,
I basically like
your next
the idea of separating society and government back, we're going to back and forth, putting out that idea of right here and there. But just as a concept, I take issue with the premise that in private charity there exists anarchy. I think it's actually quite well organized and pretty much along the lines that you just outlined. Any charity or the philanthropic organization, they'll do this, what you just described there.
Yep.
They'll figure out how much they can expect to get based on the reality of the situation, the potential donors and so on, and they draw the budget accordingly. Or they look at the need and they draw a budget and they go out there and lobby or advocate and say, this is what we'll do if we can raise as much money, and people start giving me something like the concept.
Yep.
So I think that's the way to go.
I agree.
Rather than setting up a why would you want to set up a parallel organization to the U.S. government in the private sector with Congress and all these people having to do this in their spare time?
I thought I already said that. The reason why we set it up separately is to get it out of the state, to get it out from under government control. Because that is the problem. There's a need. You're right. Charity knows how to do this. Now, suppose we took these people. We took each one of these very well-run charities, and you're correct. They're all very well-run. We put them all together. We gave them a mechanism to connect them. How many computer guys out there, computer folk? Before you sit there and put together a program, you have to do a design so that all these pieces all hook together. That's what this is. This is the higher-level piece to make everybody work together in a harmonious fashion. So, good answer. I agree. just gets it out of government. That's the only thing that your society, your charities can't do.
Like
I don't know. Is it worth $2.2 trillion to you?
And you don't have to get rid of that by doing that.
All right, Dean, you're next.
Yeah, look, I have a feeling that most of the people in this room may agree with me that we, you know, we really appreciate the particular critiques you make, but that we are not buying your solution. And let me try to, you know, put it in a framework, maybe to make it clear.
Okay.
I think that despite the validity of your arguments, you're still working within a paradigm where you're trying to take basically a Randian rationalistic approach and reform it. Whereas really, you've got to get out of that box.
I think that's five steps.
You've got to get out of that box completely.
Uh-huh.
You've got to take a more Hayekian view. Society already exists. And in fact, government is a part of...
Okay.
Government is a part of society. Society has three sectors to it. There's the political sector, which is, for better or worse, what the Libertarian Party is concerned with.
Right.
There is the market, which Rand did appreciate, and
yes,
it solves a lot more problems than the government does.
Amen.
And there's the civil society, which solves those problems which can't be solved by the other two.
Okay.
Right? The problem is that we have, partly because of the decline of religion, we've had a devaluation and a lack of appreciation for the role of civil society.
I agree.
Everybody wants to take the things that were done by civil society and by the market, too, if you're elected,
yes,
and put it in the book of government.
Exactly.
Rather than create a single society institution that by a quasi pseudo political, you know, mechanism, except without coercive part of it, tries to imitate government, which it will never be able to do because the only weapon government has is its power to force it. What will happen is if you were to succeed in setting up this society, which I don't think you'll ever succeed in doing, it will at least fall short, in the way Mike has said, if not totally fail. But either way, the leftists are going to be back and forth and say, well, we tried your idea, it didn't work, time to go back to government. Instead, what we should realize is the only reason civil society is crippled today is because government is sucking up all those resources that otherwise would be at its disposal.
You know,
and the only way that given this paradigmatic shift that I'm asking you to take, the only practical solution is, in fact, to let the disaster come. Let the government implode in order that we are the ones who now can say,
I have children and grandchildren.
Your way, didn't work.
No. I have children and grandchildren. I refuse to let the collapse come.
No.
I refuse. I'm not going to plan for it. I'm not going to wait for it.
Then you're not as appreciative of the power of civil society and markets. Throughout history, every time that there used to be a collapse, whether it's a recession, a depression, some kind of catastrophe, the recovery only took a couple of years. That's how long it takes markets and civil society to clean up the mistakes of government when they're allowed to. Only since about 1913, with the beginning of the Federal Reserve System and the draft and the income tax and all this other stuff, have we had the kind of things like the Great Depression, the Great Recession we're in now, all these other catastrophes that seem to last for years and years and years.
We have to cross the gold. I mean, that was all before.
And therefore, only when we have a collapse that's so bad that people are disillusioned and will not ask government to fix the mess it made, can we go back to having market and civil society fix the mess, which, again, I think will only take a couple of years.
Okay. Well, just to address that, what I was going to say in the very beginning is that the word society, they mean different things. And in the future, I will use the phrase civil society just to stay within the Hayekian framework. You have great command of vocabulary, by the way. I really like that. So we're agreeing. What I'm doing is I'm saying, here's an organization for the civil society, and it looks a lot like the political society.
Okay,
so
that makes
it easier for people to understand.
But that's like saying, let's bring back the great AT&T to solve our telephone problem.
No.
You know?
No, it's going to give students' charities a chance to work better together. Good point. And I agree with them virtually everything. This is one of the things I like. We're agreeing for the most part. Lorenzo, your turn.
Yeah, I go back to my thing on the word charity. I have many friends who are so-called progressives and liberals, and I have family friends who are and part of the problem is that they use the same lingo government generally uses. We have the patriot act, which is most patriotic. Okay? We have progressives who actually advocate regression. we have liberals who actually advocate authoritarianism.
Yep.
So charity is being used here incorrectly. And Rand used it incorrectly as well as you did.
Okay.
She used it the same way government used it.
Okay.
I don't know what exactly she meant, but I think she described charity when she said it's okay to give consciously your own money because you couldn't deserve it, blah, 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 blah.
Mm-hmm.
That was charity. Then she used the word charity to describe the garbage that we have at the government level. We've got to really get work are important.
I agree.
And we keep buying into this idea that the government is doing its charity. It's not even doing welfare. It's just the welfare of the people, not people on welfare.
That's
it's
right.
Very, very clear. So actually, we have a mess out there of wrong words or right words being misused and misapplied.
Correct.
And we cannot continue doing this if we're going to clarify the debate.
I'm wide open to a suggestion for an alternative term from charity.
Charity?
Just like civil, you know, the civil society. That's a great suggestion. Makes me look more intelligent.
How about shakedown for my friend?
Yeah, you're not the first one to suggest that. Jim Babs said that.
Three words for one, but that's the way it is.
Jim Babs, co-founder of WeWon'tFly.com. How many of you heard of We Won't Fly? Yeah. Good. Yep. Great place. I'm in on that too. Shakedown. I can't call it shakedown. It's got no appeal. It's like using bean curd instead of tofu. And you want people to...
It should not be appeal of the word charity. Charity means to come from charity. That's what things love. Where is the love in all this stuff?
That's what I want to put back. I want to take the gun to your head away. I want people to say, I'm 1 out of 100, I can do this.
By the way, I'm enjoying this because...
You and me both.
This may not be your intent, but you actually are bringing up something that needs to be discussed.
Thank
else
you, sir.
You're doing. So carry on.
To hold. Okay, coming around the room. Who's next? Who's next? Who's next? Who's next? Sir.
So I just want to reiterate, I also appreciate the critique part. And I think there's this, it's a matter of sales is what we say to people.
Yes.
I think you're right that you have to have an answer for this problem.
Thank you.
But I think if we really thought that it was government or nothing, we deserve to lose. And it's not government, I think it's government or the same dynamism that created the hospitals in the first place,
mm-hmm.
that invented the material wealth that we have that we're talking about redistributing.
Uh-huh.
And I think that to put maybe Susan's point together with Keith, you have to trust in a fundamental point, whether we're talking about charity or whether we're talking about the economy or whether we're talking about government, decentralized decision-making by individuals is the way that this happens. The knowledge that it would take to meet the needs of the poor and the destitute in our society does not exist anywhere. And you can't put it in to a single organization called society with a capital S because it does not exist.
You
will not meet the needs of the needy unless you allow it to be done on a local, family, individual, neighborhood level. And that's the Hayekian point that I think, if your system works, so would socialism.
No, socialism has the gun. This doesn't have a gun.
Socialism will work better. The reason socialism doesn't work is because of a knowledge problem. No matter how many guns they have, it will never work. They can kill people, but they can't satisfy human needs.
Amen.
Only
Amen.
Free action can satisfy human needs.
I agree.
So society won't do it any better.
You know, two-thirds of what you're saying, Eddie Willers says in this book. He's looking for those minds. He's looking for the... He says the solution doesn't exist. I don't know how to do it. I'm just Eddie Willers. He's my anti-hero, as you might be able to tell. I don't know what to do. I wish I had more minds working on this. I have more people working on this.
Wait, though. No, I didn't say the solution doesn't exist. It doesn't exist in one place.
That's true, too. Part of it is in Susan's charities. Part of it is in Eddie Willers' area. Part of it is in... The Hayekian. I got to learn all these words.
But Susan's charity, as such, do not exist. There's this charity and that charity and the other charity in lots of different places, and they all serve different needs for different parts of society.
Yep.
There's no such thing as Susan's charity.
There are a lot of them. Well, that's like saying, look at DOS as compared to Windows. DOS had the command line. You had to know what you wanted to do and how to say it, and you could say it. And that's the kind of charities we have now. Windows, on the other hand, brings it all together. Sometimes it crashes, and I'll give you that, but all examples went. But Windows has an overarching thing which allows them to sing together better. You could take text out of here and put it in there. I've been in the computer biz 41 years now, professional computer guy, 41 years. I remember the days when you couldn't get this punch card to merge with that punch card. But now we can because of things like Windows. And if we set up this society, it's going to allow all these various charities to merge, use the same things. I can see whole sections of it being pulled out into the marketplace, a fundraising side, a business model for all of them to use. But what this does is brings everybody together, the people who care about it, us libertarians, we're just going to go on arguing, you know, or we're going to go play with the state. We're not going to care about that. But we need to put these people in their playground where they can't be hurt. Good point, though. You and Eddie Willis. Sir.
They have a file more comments, and I'm sorry to join the horde opposed to your wonderful...
Please! Idea. This is what I want. I'm a Toastmaster. I want critique.
But these separate charities that exist now that you refer to as anarchistic, I will refer to as more libertarian because they get to do what they want to do on their own. You want to bring them all into some one overall office of society, which is exactly analogous to taking all the state rights and stealing them and putting them onto the offices of the federal government, which is exactly what libertarians are against.
I'm against it, too.
We want more decentralization, not centralization.
You're right. I'm against it, too. See, nobody is going to shut down any charity. What this is going to do is...
you want to move them into society.
I don't want to move them anywhere. I want to set up a society and let people who want to do things do things. The only motion that I advocated was getting it out of government. And every libertarian wants that. All I'm doing is I say, here's a framework, here's Windows 8, or whatever you want to call it, or charity, called Society 1.0, and move this stuff out of government. Because the alternative...
It's not just Windows, there's also Apple operating systems.
I'm sorry. Yeah, that's true. Linux. We should probably go to a Linux approach. But I'm not going to follow Gene's suggestion. I'm not going to wait for the world to collapse. Like I said, I got kids, I got grandkids, and I got me in the way. No! That's why I gotta hurry up and find an agent. Are there any literary agents in the room? Literary. Bob.
Ken, I'm gonna agree with you.
And hey, you the man!
Here's
another five.
The market works out for
you. Well done, libertarian.
What I do like about it, it has a recognizable structure and a parallel structure, and that it, over a short amount of time, if people can see this working, it will delegitimize government. Nothing brings down the state quicker, faster, and less violence delegitimization. 10,000 people basically run this country out of 300 million people. We could squash them overnight physically if we wanted to, but still some people are going to go down. But if we can delegitimize the state and people will get away from, you're seeing the post office go down, people pay their bills online, or you go up, I pay at a drugstore, things along those lines. People are using Skype for phone calls now and bypassing.
Yep.
These parallel organizations, I like that. My question to you is, what would be the first couple of tangible steps you could see in organizing?
Very good. I'm a business architect. That's what I call myself in the information technology world. And what we do is we, instead of looking things in silos, like accounts payable, accounts receivable, we cut across it and we look for a value stream from order to happy customer and then all the pieces involved. And everything else is just a little bit. Most customers out there, most clients, don't want business architecture. No, we do it like this, we do it like this. So the way that we bring them around is you look for a small thing with a high return. And you go in and you do that. And when they say, whoa, look at that, they solved that problem. So all of a sudden now you have their attention. So that's how it would begin. And I don't have a suggestion for what that might be, but I'm going to go away and I'm going to come up with one. So that's what we would do. We'd have some high-profile thing, easy to do, with a high return. So all of a sudden now people are looking at the business architecture and saying, hey, this could work. But the second thing is that we don't need them. We don't have to lobby our senators. We don't have to call our congressmen. We don't have to do anything. We could do it right now. You guys can sit here right now and say, we're going to form the Society of Maryland. I'm running for head of society. Ayn Rand called it head of state. I call it in the book, I call it head of society. You can do it right now. You could start it. It could be, I hesitate to call it a shadow government because it's not a government. Shadow government is a bad thing. You don't want to use anybody else's words. Going back to what Lorenzo said, words have a power. That's why I always say government education, the two old parties, things like that. But that's how I would do it. I would look for a low-hanging fruit that just because of the nature of government, it can't solve.
Would you suggest that the Amish and the other Anabaptist faiths have a similar structure or something close to what you're proposing?
Yeah. You know, I have to plead ignorance. I was born and raised in Pennsylvania. I'm 50 miles away from the Pennsylvania Deutsche, but I couldn't tell you how they were. And I ran for governor of Pennsylvania. I found out they don't vote, so I wasn't a. I didn't have to do a whole lot of campaigning, if I'm the honest. So I don't know. I will find out that too. This is why I'm here. Friendly audience, keep me up. Coming around.
So I do agree. It sounds good too. I think it should be local, like some of the people here were saying. Like, as far as, like, if I give my money, I don't want to give it to the National Society, but Maryland, where I know the person who's getting my charity or whatever you want to call it, I know who that person is.
Yep.
So if they're also collecting on the corner of Germantown and Maine, whatever, if they're out there begging for money and they're collecting, or I know that they actually have a job and they don't need to collect, right? So there's no accountability today in today's system for those who are supposed to be needy, whatever their need might be.
Right.
When you initially said, I invite you to pull polls, I was thinking more along the lines of the people that you're trying to convince to move to this model, not the people in this room, but the challenge that you have in the libertarian platform, So, along those lines, I would say that if I was somebody who was worried about losing benefits, I would wonder, well, man is not generally generous.
Uh-huh.
So if you're going to remove my guarantee and just rely, I hope that it will collect enough money. That would be my fear as somebody who's hoping to collect some kind of welfare.
Well, let me rephrase what you said. Are you saying that I should be talking this approach up among the unemployed and among the needy?
Well, yeah.
Because they're the ones who have the most to gain from it.
They are.
And that brings the market back in, right?
Well, so then the question is, when you try to push this idea of I'm going to remove it from the government, I'm going to take it out, and it's going to be a pure voluntary system where we hope that the general population is going to contribute, the only people, the loudest screaming that you're going to hear are the people who are benefiting today from this.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to be worried that they're not going to get what they're getting today, which they probably won't.
They probably won't.
Okay,
we can't afford it.
So what's your comeback to that objection? That, hey, nobody's going to really take care of me if it's all voluntary. What do you say to that?
Well, first of all, they will, because there are always people who are going to contribute. Americans give more money than anybody else on the planet. And as was already pointed out, that if people see that this is working, whether it's something local or whatever it may be, that they're going to want to contribute to do it. So there's a lot of people who may wind up making less money, getting less help. There's no question about that. But I don't think it's going to be as bad as all that, because on the other side of the fence, we're going to have a heightened prosperity because we're going to be dragging less from the economy. So I think it's going to be a mixed bag. But those are good points, and I'm going to see if I can incorporate that a little bit better.
Okay.
We're running low on time. Oh, is that it?
Yeah, please.
One more question.
Okay.
I just had a comment. I kind of reacted negatively because you're basically proposing kind of an activist solution.
Mm-hmm.
Just for the sake of political expediency, you were saying, well, we're never going to get elected unless we play their game. And I think that's a losing proposition because you're forced to violate your fundamental principles. So the question is, the issue...
I'm not violating the principle.
Sure it is.
Name the principle.
Well, the principle is, sometimes people have to be told, hey, there may not be a solution. Everybody's always looking for a solution and looking to government.
Uh-huh.
And the whole libertarian philosophy is basically to look to the individual person as a responsible person themselves and not as to a collectivist government.
Uh-huh.
So you're basically saying, well, we're never going to get elected.
I didn't use the word never. We have, 60-odd people in Pennsylvania currently serving in public office.
Okay, but
the very
hole in the libertarian platform, right?
Yep, because we don't address that. We don't address the civil society, as Dean would put it.
Yeah, the way I look at it, it's better to adhere to principles and remain true to your principles than for political expediency.
I have remained true to my...
You've been down that road with, George Bush.
That's right.
Others, so
I remain true to my principles.
Yeah.
I'm not holding a gun to anyone's head.
I see it that way. And, in the old days...
I'm not holding...
There was charity. It was called philanthropy.
Sure.
And it worked.
And it will come back. Now the philanthropists have a place to give their money.
Okay,
right.
Let's give Ken a big hand.
Thank you! Thank you! Take a 5-minute break, and then Dr. Lark will be speaking.
How much is the book?
The book is currently not for sale. However, this one, I'm going to auction this off later tonight. This is the version that's going out to the agents right now. So this is complete, and if you want to get it, I'm going to have to ask you to sign a non-disclosure agreement. All right, so we're going to be auctioning it off later. This is complete. There may be a typo or two in there, but there it is. It starts the incident where Atlas Shrugged leaves off. So Eddie Willers was on the train out in the middle of Arizona. He starts off on the train in the middle of Arizona. Chick Morrison is running out of the Wayne Falkin Hotel in her book at the end. In the beginning, he's running out of the Wayne Falkin Hotel. This is right against Atlas Shrugged. And it's only half the size. That's it. Thank you very much.